Thank you, Desiree. Good morning, everyone. My name is Heather, and I will be talking about adolescent alcohol use in the home. I want to thank my co-author, Desiree, as well as FCD Prevention Works and my colleagues who are here in attendance, both for their work and their support of the organization and their work that they execute in the schools that we work in. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. The nonprofit that I work for, FCD Prevention Works, is a small organization that provides health-based substance abuse prevention to students around the world. We work primarily with school systems, with grades from kindergarten through 12th grade. We are a service-driven organization and not a research institution. Therefore, our services are designed with how to best serve the schools in which we work. One of the services that is provided is a 50-question survey based on the social norms approach to prevention that is used to assess the behaviors and student attitudes within a given school. It was developed in 2004 with Dr. Ellen Berkowitz, a leading social norms researcher, and then was externally evaluated by Dr. Aaron Turner of the University of Washington, who is a specialist in behavior-based education initiatives. There is a range of substance use questions covering alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, and other drugs, and consequences related to that use. Students are asked their opinions regarding their own use, a peer's use, and how substance use affects the climate of their school. There are questions regarding faculty and parental involvement, school policies, and family substance use rules. Since its beginning, the survey has undergone several revisions, updating language, adding new questions of interest, and adding new substances, such as electronic cigarettes, which was added this fall. Since we work with school systems, these revisions always coincide with the start of each academic year to provide consistency in the surveys within that given academic year. The survey is administered either in its paper version, which is seen here in its Scantron form, or online, depending on the preference of the school. Schools elect when they take the survey based on their own school schedules, usually ranging from August to June, and can be done in one day over the course of 2 or 3 days. The data is then returned to us, where it is cleaned. It is run through a series of 25 tests to check for inconsistencies that may indicate a student lied or didn't take the survey seriously. The remaining data is then analyzed, and the results returned to the school to guide them in their prevention planning efforts. Until 2013, this data only served individual client schools. But in the fall of 2013, these individual surveys were aggregated for the first time with the intent of using this pooled data to further support our client schools and their prevention programs, but then also to start seeing greater trends that cannot be seen on a smaller scale. At the time of abstract submission, the database was on its second iteration, containing data from academic years 2009 through 2014. In addition to the data collected on the survey, we added additional variables to complement the student responses. We added demographic information, such as the state and or the country that the school resides and the population density of that area. We looked at local laws related to the use of alcohol and marijuana. We added school descriptors, such as public, independent, boarding, and parochial. And we continue to update this database annually, adding about 25 to 35 surveys each academic year. There are limitations to this data set. We only have data from the schools that opt into our survey, which are usually schools who are already utilizing one or more of our other services. There could be unique qualities about these schools that we cannot control for within our analysis. We also primarily work with private and independent schools, with only 12% of our data coming from public schools. Therefore, while our data set is vast, it covers a narrower, select population of students. At the time of our research, the database held over 53,000 student responses from 96 schools across 24 countries. You will notice that while our database had 123 individual surveys, that only covered 96 schools. That is because some of our schools choose to re-administer the survey either each academic year or over the course of every 2 to 3 years in order to track their own trends. So of the student body in our database, 53% of that data comes from schools conducting the survey for the first time, while the other 47% comes from schools who have chosen to re-administer the survey during different academic years. Working with schools, we not only interact with students, but also the faculty and the parents. And a question we often get is regarding parental permission to use alcohol or other drugs. So using this data, we sought to examine the relationship between parental permission to use substances in the home and negative consequences related to one's own alcohol use. Four questions on the survey were used for this analysis. Two questions were used as a proxy for parental permission. These questions are written out: have you ever used alcohol, marijuana, or other drugs not prescribed for you at your home with a parent or guardian knowing, not including a few sips of wine with family or for religious purposes? And second, have you ever used alcohol, marijuana, or other drugs not prescribed for you at your home without your parent or guardian knowing? Students responded yes or no. While these two questions are worded parent or guardian knowing, we used these questions as a proxy for permission. If the parent or guardian knew the student was using in the home, it could be seen by the student as permission, whether that was intended or not. The next two survey questions that were used relate to negative consequences experienced by the student. These two questions are only answered on the survey if the student reported using alcohol within the past year, and this is all self-reported. There are a total of 21 negative consequences covered on the survey. Five follow the prompt, during the past 12 months, have you ever? And 16 consequences follow the prompt, because of your drinking, how many times in the past 12 months did you? Students responded to each consequence with never, one time, two times, or three or more times. So looking back at our original data set, we started with over 53,000 6th through 12th grade students. Since the negative consequences question was only answered by students who had a drink in the past year, this restricts our sample down to 40% of students who reported having a drink in the past year, which was about 21,000 students. In addition, the two questions regarding parental knowledge of use in the home was added in the fall of 2010. So this leaves us with a data set of 15,686 students to analyze. The remaining data was skewed towards older grades with the highest proportion in 10th, 11th, and 12th. And knowing that alcohol use typically increases with age, this was expected and then later controlled for. Of those remaining students, the majority of them reported using alcohol or other drugs in the home without a parent or guardian knowing, and 39% reporting using substances in the home with a parent or guardian knowing. Looking to the negative consequences, 85% of the student data set reported experiencing at least one of the negative consequences. These questions outlined a variety of outcomes. There were physical consequences, such as getting hurt or injured, driving a car after drinking, riding as a passenger after the driver had been drinking, and feeling sick, vomiting, or having a hangover. There were emotional consequences, such as feeling guilty about your drinking or doing something you later felt sorry for. We asked about academic and disciplinary consequences, such as missing or performing poorly at school, work, or an athletic event, having trouble concentrating on homework, classwork, or other important tasks, or getting in trouble at home or school. There are also consequences that point towards the progression of addiction. These are our consequences that most closely relate to the DSM-5 criteria for alcohol use disorder, such as needing a drink or other drug first thing in the morning, using alcohol or other drugs while you're by yourself, or passing out because of drinking. We ran each of these consequences through a logistic regression model, changing the negative consequences to never and ever experienced instead of the breakdown of one, two, or three or more times. We controlled for age, gender, the location of the school, whether it was in the U.S. or international, and the legal drinking age of each country. So here is a look at our preliminary findings. On this slide is a table of the first 10 of the 21 negative consequences that were surveyed. Students who used at home without a parent or guardian's knowledge were 2 to 5 times more likely to experience all 21 consequences compared to students who did not use at home without a parent or guardian's knowledge. Taking a look at this slide, what we found interesting is that the ones that had the highest odds ratios are also ones that related to the DSM-5 criteria for an alcohol use disorder, such as thinking they had a drinking or other drug problem, needing a drink or other drug first thing in the morning, using alcohol by oneself, and getting drunk. On this slide is the other 11 negative consequences that are surveyed. Similarly, these consequences that had the highest odds ratios are also those that relate to the progression of addiction, such as feeling sick, vomiting or having a hangover, forgetting what happened while they were drinking, passing out because of drinking, and having something to drink right before or during school hours. All 21 negative consequences were statistically significant, which was not the case with what we found with using with a parent's knowledge. So looking at use in the home with a parent or guardian's knowledge compared to students who answered no to this question, 8 consequences showed no statistically significant difference between the two groups. So among these on this slide, you can see that some of these consequences could have matched the DSM-5 criteria, such as getting sick or getting into a harmful situation, such as getting into a sexual situation that they later regretted. The one that was closest to being significant was getting involved with people they think are a bad influence, but towards the end where it might be protective. So there were actually 4 consequences that students who used at home with a parent's knowledge were protected against. Students who used at home with a parent's knowledge were less likely to get drunk, feel guilty about their drinking, do something they later felt sorry for, or feeling the need or tried to cut down on their own drinking or other drug use. Looking at these outcomes, they seem to support the idea that drinking at home with parental knowledge is protective. Students are less likely to drink to a point of intoxication. They're in a controlled environment, so they're less likely to regret something that they did, and they don't feel guilty because they have permission for the behavior, and they don't feel the need to try to cut down because they have permission to use for the behavior. But just because in the short term it might be protective, it doesn't mean it doesn't have long-term health consequences. For example, a lack of guilt could normalize and perpetuate a behavior or an attitude that is in the end harmful to an adolescent's health. And we see these harms in the remaining 9 negative consequences that were surveyed. Compared to students who answered no to this question, students who used at home with a parent's knowledge were at greater odds of experiencing these 9 negative consequences. While the magnitude of the effect is smaller than what we saw with without a parent's knowledge, when we look at what these negative consequences reflect, we see that all 9 could fit under the criteria under the DSM-5 for alcohol use disorder, such as needing a drink or other drug, using by oneself, putting oneself in harm's way, such as driving after drinking, riding as a passenger with a driver who's intoxicated, getting hurt or injured, or passing out. So what we can gather from this data is that any substance use by an adolescent comes with risk, with or without a parent or guardian knowing. Using substances in the home without parental permission had a greater magnitude of risk, but using with a parent's knowledge didn't come without its own risk. The negative consequences that were seemingly protective may be so in the short term, but they still have long-term negative health consequences to adolescent health and their developing brain. As public health practitioners and researchers, our goal should be to continue to communicate and clarify the risks of substance use for adolescents and continue to research the relationships between substance use and its effects on adolescent health. Thank you, and here's our contact information.